Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
At your service, it's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now, the host of the Home Improvement Show, Rich Orris, on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, here we go. Hour two of the Home Improvement Show. Plenty going on. Had some really good calls, questions, thoughts in the first hour, and hoping to hear more of that in the second hour. We got plenty of time for everyone. Anything you need, whatever you have going on, you can find me again, 314-436-7900. Get you right to me right here. We've been talking a lot about the snow, the cold, the extreme cold that we're about to go through here with the forecast, with the snow, and the next week's going to be very, very cold. And so we were kind of talking over different ways to stop drafts, insulate around, and check for drafts around the house. Other areas, when you look at the piping in your home, like we kind of went over with Jill, going to get their second place ready that they're going to sell soon. Talked about leaving those cabinet doors open so that underneath the sinks you can allow that warm air to circulate around the pipes and underneath the sinks. You don't want to trap any cold air if it does start to kind of infiltrate in from anywhere. Joe was a little leery on letting the faucet drip slightly, but that does during cold weather. It having that small trickle of water will keep the water in the pipe moving, and moving water is less likely to freeze than water sitting still. So that is a good thing to do, especially if it's in your home you're in and you have a troubled area where it's kind of happened before. And also insulating, consider insulating those pipes, wrapping exposed pipes in basements or garage areas with the foam insulation, or even if it's a real troubled area, doing some heat tape that you can plug in to keep that pipe warm during these extreme cold times like this. Of course, having your HVAC systems kind of checked out, have your furnace checked out prior to winter is always very important. Having that tune-up done by a professional. But right now, something you could do is just go to your furnace, go downstairs, go to the closet, wherever it is, go to your furnace and just check that filter if you haven't checked it in a while. Changing that filter, if the filter's pretty dirty, it does improve the efficiency, and your units are going to be working harder already right now the colder it gets. So if you can give it a little relief with a brand new clean filter, that is a great idea to do. So we kind of touched on the windows and the doors, closing, if you have heavy curtains, closing them, hanging a thermal or insulated blanket or some type of curtain to just retain the warmth in the room and keep the cold between that blanket and the door or window that you're having trouble with is another great thing to do. Just kind of have that barrier there to keep that temperature difference. So inspecting everything is always a great thing to do if you could get to it earlier before this happens, and just making sure that your gutters are clean. There's nothing you see with the roof before all this snow happens. Any areas like that are good to just visually inspect and check out before we get this type of weather. But again, like Greg was mentioning, maintain that fireplace, make sure, and the chimney, make sure you have it, the damper open when you go to make a fire. Having the professionals check and clean those chimneys every year is definitely a must to prevent any blockages or fire hazards, and making sure your firewood is stocked, ready to go, just being prepared for what's about to happen. Having it on hand and dry firewood ready for you is imperative if you have a wood-burning stove or a wood-burning fireplace. Preparing for the outages, especially if you're in an area where this seems to happen quite often, just having the emergency supplies stocked up and ready to go, blankets and batteries, flashlights, any type of non-perishable foods that you could have during a power outage is a great thing to have on hand before any of this happens. Think about backup heat, and maybe this is something you do for next year if it's a little late right now, but having a safe alternative heat source. I mean, we've been talking about this. They're talking about on the news. When you do these alternative heat sources, that is when things go wrong. So having a more permanent alternative heat source, like a wood stove or something like that, that is installed and vented and proper, and you know it's safe, that is just a great thing to have on hand. So maybe that could be even your resolution this year, is having something like that done during this year, having it installed and hooked up correctly, and having it for next year is just it's a good proactive thing to do and take care of. And then during these power outages, as the power goes out, as the power comes on, protecting all those electronic devices, having we get all these power fluctuations. So having the surge protectors, another thing we've talked about a few times this past year is a whole home surge protector. We're going to be seeing a lot more of those, and we're going to be seeing them more regulated in the future with new home building, new construction in the codes, where eventually they'll have it in the code where it's just there on your panel box. So that could be another resolution. Maybe you consider getting a whole home surge protector to protect your house at your panel box, and make that your goal to check that out and see if you can get that accomplished this year. Would be a great thing to do. Monitoring your water heater is very important. Just making sure everything's working efficiently, insulating around it in a cold basement is a great thing to do. And then, of course, test all of that equipment, your smoke detectors, your carbon monoxide detectors, like we were talking about earlier briefly, too. Make sure the batteries are good. Make sure they work. Make sure they're not too old, and check the dates and on them and all that. And your carbon monoxide detectors are good for about 7-8 years. your smoke detectors about 10 years. They say 8 to 10 years. So make sure by year 10, you're replacing all of those for sure. We're going to get into our first break of this hour here. Got plenty more to come. And if you need anything out of me, again, phone lines are wide open for everybody. 314-436-7900. Get you right in and get you right to me. We're going to take a short break and we'll have more to come after this. All right, we are back. And we've got plenty going on for you. Plenty that we can talk about, go over. Love the calls. Love the questions. Love to hear from you. 314-436-7900. Again, get you right to me. And we got Debbie on the line, has a question for us. Debbie, are you there? What do you got going on?
Yes, I am.
Thanks for calling.
I want to remodel my shower. Uh-huh. And I had a wall behind my shower that goes to the outer wall, and I knocked a hole through the drywall to see what was behind it, and it's an airspace, and I don't know, my house is 65 years old, so I don't know back then if there was a requirement that you had to have a 3-foot space to so your pipes don't freeze, because I would like to enlarge in my shower. And okay. Then the other question I have is the toilet. I went to a bath remodeling place, and they told me something about my toilet has to be so far away from the walls and from the shower and all this stuff. And if I make my shower larger, it would mean I'd need to move my toilet over probably 6 inches or something like that. And I am going to get a little bit smaller countertop with for my dual sinks and stuff. So those okay. are the two questions I have.
Yeah. So you can make the cabinets and the countertop a little smaller, shift the toilet over. Yeah. So to create more space for that shower. In most areas, I believe off the top of my head, it's 30 inch wide area for a toilet, basically 15 inches each direction from the center. Is what you need for the space of the toilet to meet code.
I live in St. Louis County.
So. Yeah. Yep. So that should be accurate for you. In the shower itself, the 3-foot area. So what you're saying, or at least what I think I'm hearing, is there's a 3-foot space between the exterior wall and the wall of your shower.
Yes.
Okay. So there isn't really a code that, and it's almost kind of unfortunate, but there isn't a code that really states like you have to have a certain space or anything like that for freezing pipes and everything. It's definitely not recommended that you put any pipes inside of the exterior wall, just so that they won't freeze. If that's the side of the shower that you need to have the shower head and all the piping on, what I would recommend and the way I usually handle that is I finish that exterior wall off, make sure it's insulated well, make sure it's drywalled. So it's sealed like a whole wall.
Okay, it does have some insulation, yeah, okay. Right now.
Yeah. So if you drywall that, and kind of seal it and have the insulation inside of there. And then what you do is you build another wall in front of that wall. And it,
okay.
Like a complete isolation from the exterior wall to the inside of the bathroom. Then you can put your pipes, everything inside that new wall. And you can have very minimal space between those walls. So instead of like a 30-inch space, you could have like an inch space. So you could If you're 30 inches, you could gain 2 feet of that 30 inches to make your shower longer and still have the water on that side of the wall as long as you double that up, seal it very well. And I would tape, mud, I would do everything to that exterior wall to block off. And what you're doing is you're creating a true thermal barrier. An entire sealed wall system, and then you put everything in front of it, and you should be fine from pipes freezing
okay.
and all of
that. Yeah, I was going to ask the plumber for an estimate to move the shower head to the inner wall versus
Yeah, and that's an even better idea. Yep. And you know, another thing you don't want to make sure you don't do, too, is put any like recess shower niches or anything recessed into a wall that is in the exterior wall of the home, because you totally lose your insulation value. It'll just kind of make that back cold and keep that shower colder in the winter and all that, not having the insulation value inside that wall.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All righty. No problem. Perfect. I appreciate the call and the question. And let's jump over to Rick has a question for us. Rick, what's up?
Good morning, or good afternoon by now. I've got a pipe that comes down. I'm 99% sure that it's from the toilet in the guest bathroom, and it goes down into PVC pipe, and then where it makes the hook, there is a nut there that, you know, that you could unscrew. Anyway, on that, I see looks like a lot of calcium buildup or something kind of buildup. And then on the floor in the basement, directly below that, I can see where that it has dripped down there. What do you think is happening there?
Well, so there's two things that could be happening, because it is common at those fittings where that's screwed together that it could have a really slow leak. And that creates all of kind of the white looking calcium stuff around the nut and everything. And then occasionally, yeah, if it leaks enough, it could drip. And the other thing that could be happening, if it's in a basement area, if it's near the outside wall, the outside band board, the foundation wall, if you have any air infiltrating around that floor system between the floor and the concrete wall, you could also just be getting condensation on that pipe.
Okay.
At different times. And as that condensation turns to water and kind of runs down that pipe, it hits that fitting, that nut, that area, it gets trapped there. That's where it'll drip, and that's where it'll also start to form the same kind of calcium white-looking deposits around it, and you think it's like, oh, the fitting must be leaking, but it could just be condensation, where if the water heater's not too far away and it's kind of warm air coming from that or the furnace, and then cold air in the winter is infiltrating in around that floor, it could be condensation and it's not truly a leak. But I'd still recommend replacing that fitting, even if you figured out it was condensation and you could handle the condensation. I'd replace that fitting just because it's got all that around it, and it could probably start to leak just because of all the corrosion and everything on it.
There is an O-ring, you know, that, you know, between the nut and the P-trap, I guess that's whatever that's called, on the PVC, that I can actually move. I'm actually moving it right now.
Okay. So it's kind of like on the plastic drain pipe?
Yes.
And you can move you can get to the white kind of plastic ring?
It looks like it's a darker color.
It sounds to me like that you really shouldn't necessarily see that. It's a plastic pipe, right? A white PVC?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
So you really shouldn't necessarily see that. And I've often, very often, seen those O-rings installed upside down.
Okay.
Backwards. And for some reason... So that could be installed incorrectly and needs to just get taken apart and installed the right way, because that you shouldn't really be able to touch that O-ring. You should be able to kind of, if you look down into the nut, between the nut and the pipe, maybe see the back side of it, but
yeah,
you really shouldn't be able to grab it. Yeah,
I really can see it easily.
I think it's on upside down.
Okay.
I need to take all that apart and put that on in the correct order, right side up, and tighten it up. And so you're, it probably is just a slow leak.
Okay.
Around that drain. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it very much.
All right. No problem. Yeah. Good luck with that. And I'm sure that's probably what's going on. But so we're going to jump into a really quick middle hour break here so that we have some time for John's question when we come back. So, John, if you could hang on for just a couple minutes, we'll get to you first as soon as we come back. And for everybody else, we'll be here. We'll have plenty of time for you. 314-436-7900. Appreciate it. And we'll be back with more after this. All right, here we go. We're back and we're here for everybody today. Got a lot going on. Plenty of time for your calls and questions. 314-436-7900. Let's thank John for hanging on through the break there and get right to John and see what's going on. Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. What's going on?
Okay, I got a hot water heater going out. It's a 40-gallon gas. And it's about 20 years old, so I know it's starting to rust around the seams, and I know it's going on and losing a lot of hot water. My question is, once again, it's 20 years old, and it's been a long time since I had one installed. What's a good, fair price to have one installed?
Well, yeah, that is that's tough because it depends a lot on the – there's two things that really relays into is one, what do you pick as a hot water heater? What are you looking to get out of it? Because the hot water heaters themselves can range a lot in price based on how efficient they are, all the way up to going into a tankless water heater type of deal.
Right. I checked all that out. It's the state, the one I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy, according to the plumber, that was one of the better ones. So I chose that one. So he gave me a price, and I'm just wanting to make sure it's, you know, a good price, fair price.
Yeah, yeah. So depending on the type of company, plumbing company, do they do more than just plumbing or not? It's going to, you'll have a little more service and a little more things going on with a type of company, which we compare to stuff like that all the time here at Mosby Building Arts, being full service, everything we do. Some things just cost a little bit more because of the different people we have and all the different services that we can render. So you have the same thing in the plumbing world. So I would say a normal gas hot water heater could be anywhere from $2,500 to $4,000
or $5,000. He's in that range.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it was that high.
Oh, everything. Yes. Everything has changed. Everything has gone up. Plumbers make, everyone's pay has gone up. Labor is very much a part of why costs are where they are and why they continue to increase. Because once we got over the first couple years of COVID and all of the material changes and all the material increases, then all of a sudden we were in the midst of a labor shortage, and everyone has done nothing but give raises 2-3 times a year for the past 3 years to keep good employees. Or like the plumbers, you get into like the plumbing union, pipe fitters union, electrical union. They're fine till their contract comes up, but what happens is then they get it all at once that contract comes up. So they don't go up 3-5% 2-3 times a year, they go up 25% at the end of 2 years.
Wow.
So yeah.
He locked me in on a price.
Yeah.
For 30 days only, because he says cause of inflation and what have you, it could change that quick.
Yes.
Yep. So I locked in at a price I can afford, and it wasn't that price range you just mentioned.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go ahead and get it done. I just wanted to make sure, I'm not overpaying. and that's the going rate. That's all I wanted to know.
Yep. Nope. You're perfect. I think you're right in there. Appreciate the call. And
thanks, Rich.
You're welcome. Let's jump over to Larry and see what's going on. I think he's got something with the water heater also. Larry, you there?
I am.
Hey, what's happening?
Well, I'm like everybody else. I'm waiting with apprehension about what exactly state of environmental condition we're going to have in 24 hours. But meanwhile, yeah. I appreciate your theme regarding what you've been talking about today. My question is, I have a hot water heater, gas fired. How often should I flush that? In other words, drain it just to get the sediment out, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So how old is it?
This one is maybe 7 or 8 years.
7 or 8 years. Okay. And have you ever flushed it before?
Yes, I have.
Okay, good, good. That's a good thing. So I would say flush it once a year.
Okay.
Is what I would do. Go through those steps to flush it once a year. And since you've flushed it in the past, you've got a good thing going. For everyone out there that has an 8-year-old or more year old water heater and you've never flushed it, then I would say don't even bother start flushing it until you get your next new water heater. Because it is a good idea to start that. And for John, too, who's about to get his new water heater and was asking about cost and investments in it, to start that process 12 months after you get it and do it once a year is a great thing to do for your water heater. But once you get so much calcium in there, it's going to be hard to help it.
So. The process, as I remember, I turn off the water to the hot water heater. I open the vent so that the water can escape and with air replaces it, and then just drain it out and then reverse that process and refill it with water.
So a good thing to, the first thing you want to do is cut off the power, the gas.
Cut off the
gas and everything, shut off the cold water supply. And then, open that valve. If you have a hose you could put on it that gets it closer to your floor drain, that would be awesome. And let that flush out, let that tank empty. And then what you want to do is turn that cold water back on with the tank empty and with the valve open and the hose going to the floor drain, and just let that run through and flush out the bottom for a couple minutes, maybe 2 minutes. It shouldn't take a whole real long time. It wouldn't be a bad idea to watch it and see if you're seeing calcium deposits. And if you're still seeing them, then maybe let it go a little bit longer. But a couple minutes usually works. Turn the cold water source back off. And close the valve, get everything. Then you can turn your cold water source back on, let the tank fill back up, and refire it up.
So are you suggesting I don't have to empty it 100%, just enough for the lower part?
No, I would empty it 100%.
Okay.
And then once it stops draining and it's empty 100%, open up the cold, the shutoff supply like you're going to refill it.
All right. But just flush it again.
Let it flush and run out so it's not filling up. It's still coming out the valve at the bottom.
And
that'll flush some of that out of there that maybe didn't get out just with it draining. Then you can shut everything and fill it back up and turn it back on. Yep.
Good.
All righty.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, no problem. Let's jump over to Keith. We got a few more minutes here before the break. See what's going on with Keith. You there?
Thank you. Awesome. Yeah, no problem.
Hello?
Yeah, Keith.
Hey, settle a dispute I have with my wife. Should the furnace fan be on all the time or not?
So it is a great, great thing to constantly circulate air inside your house. And so if you can run that furnace fan 100% of the time, yes, it is a good thing to do. And that's why they even make in newer furnaces, they make variable speed fans where it can run at a lower speed all the time 24 hours a day, and then when your heat or your air AC kicks on, it will then jump up to a higher rate fan and blow harder and while it's trying to heat or cool your house. So the variable speed fans are great for running that fan all the time. But, yes, it's a good idea to run that fan all the time. And that's why
well,
they
now
made
I
those. Yeah.
Now I got to buy her dinner.
That's awesome. Yeah, and ceiling fans are good, too. Of when we have ceiling fans around the house, it's a great idea to keep a fan on low always. Just never shut it off and just have it on low, have it spinning and moving air from like the ceiling down towards the floor or vice versa to move the air around your house. Yep.
All right.
All right.
Well, thanks for the help.
White no problem.
Doesn't sound too bad for the dinner though.
Yeah. Hey, they do White Castle does a really cool Valentine's Day thing. Yeah, you can consider that. They have like a whole eat-in dining experience. I've never done it. Me and my wife should absolutely do that one year, but I've heard about it often. So, yeah, love White Castles.
Yeah, well, sometimes they kick me out of places. I went to a bar the other night, and they wanted me to get out of there because they wanted to start happy hour.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, I'll tell you my father's White Castle story real fast before we take a break. When he moved to St. Louis and he was looking for work, and my whole family was from Pennsylvania coal mines back in the 60s and all that, and in 70s, and work's going away in the coal mines, and he's coming down towards the center of the country finding jobs, looking for work. He lands in St. Louis and he stops at this little restaurant and he orders a cup of coffee, and he's sitting there drinking a cup of coffee, just got into town, and he hears someone go up to the counter and order like 6 cheeseburgers. And he thinks, what in the world is this person doing? And then he sees him come over and sit down with the tray, and it's these little bitty White Castle burgers. He had no idea where he was. First experience. Thought, this guy's going to eat 6 cheeseburgers. He's out of his mind. And nope, they do it. They're fun. They're great. So have a good time, Keith. I appreciate it. We're going to take our break. If you need anything in the last segment, I'll be here for you. 314-436-7900. We'll be right back with more to come after this. All right, everybody, here we are, last segment, and if you have something for me, I'm here. We've got a few minutes here. You can get in real quick, 314-436-7900. I do want to go over something that we touched on a little bit, and I've definitely touched on this 2 or 3 different times in the past month, but it's really one of the most important things, I think, that you really need to pay attention this time of year, and with what's happening out there right now and what we're about to go through, and if you have power outages and all that. But, you know, just preventing carbon monoxide poisoning, it's so important to know. Obviously, it's deadly. It's both odorless and invisible. That's why they call it the silent killer, and you just don't even know that it's there. A lot of the symptoms are symptoms that you just might feel with any kind of illness. So it's very hard to determine whether or not without some sort of, so the best thing you can do, obviously, to protect yourself is having really good newer carbon monoxide detectors in the home and locating them in good places. Like, I have one that plugs into a wall outlet, and it's about 4 feet into my house, right in front of the garage door. Because if something were coming in from the garage, that's a spot it might happen. You don't want it right at your furnace, but you want it in that furnace room. You want one on every level of the house, just so that you get it anywhere, they go off. So, and the other issue is, if you're asleep, you don't even necessarily ever experience any symptoms from that where you would wake up and even have symptoms. So in that case, the detector is even more essential to going off and waking you up and alerting you to the fact that something's wrong in the home. So that is your best number one line of defense. The other thing is understanding and knowing the symptoms. So when you put two and two together with right now, understanding that the dizziness, headaches, nausea, vomiting, chest pain, all of these things can be from that carbon monoxide. If you start to experience that, go outside, get fresh air, and just get out of the house. And then all of a sudden, if you start to feel better, then you know for sure it, you're recuperating from that and you need to do something about the house. So understand those symptoms and everything. So, hey, we got Jan on the line here, and let's see what's going on with Jan. Hey, how can we help you?
Well, I just had a question about calcium chloride, which I have purchased for the first time in my life for my driveway, which is an exposed aggregate driveway.
Mm-hmm.
Is it something that you put out before the snow?
Yes.
Or during?
Yeah. I'd put it out before. Yep, just like any kind of rock salt or anything like that. I mean, rock salt obviously is the worst one that damages your concrete, but yeah, I'd put it out before.
Okay, and then just sprinkle it around, and then do you do it intermittently as it builds up, or will it keep up with the snow? Or
well, it definitely will not keep up with snow. It will just keep up. It'll keep up more with the freezing and the ice. So when snow's coming down, it's going to do just like any of them. The snow's going to pack. If you shovel, you're going to shovel it away. And so basically I just reapply it every time I shovel.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, thank you very much.
All right. No problem. Thanks for the call. And we've got just a couple minutes left. Let's get to Robin real quick. Has a question. Robin, what's going on?
Thank you so much. So you're talking about replacing CO2 detectors and smoke detectors.
Yeah.
How do you get them? I feel like they should talk to each other.
Yes.
So how do you do that? They're hardwired in my house. My house is 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
So how do I get some that talk to each other?
So yeah, you can. So if you have them already hardwired, then those you have talk to each other. And you just need to buy the hardwired versions to replace them. That will work the same way and will talk to each other. But what you do now is what they also make is a combination carbon monoxide smoke detector. So it will do, there's ones out there that will do both, and they'll still talk to each other for if it's just smoke or whatever, or if it's carbon monoxide, they'll still talk to one another where they'll all go off. So on each level of the home, buy one that's a carbon monoxide and smoke detector, and then all the rest are smoke detectors, and just replace them in the hardwired fashion and then test them, push the test bus button. They should all go off at once.
And by the way, the CO2 detectors do work because ours went off in our old house and I didn't pay any attention to it. And it went off again. The fire department shut down our furnace because we had a crack.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, so, it's so important. And I had it years ago where we had one that went off on a carbon monoxide detector, and unbeknownst to me and learning a lot of this over time, it was because of dust collecting on it. And it was about an 8-year-old detector. And so we didn't have carbon monoxide, but it went off because of, it was just malfunctioning. And so the fire department came, they checked everything out. They said, you don't have anything, but we looked at the date on the carbon monoxide detector and they were like, replace them all. And that's when I started really reading into it going, wow, that should be done way more often than we thought. So, hey, Robin, we're out of time. I appreciate the call. Great question. I love everybody to definitely have that information. And starting 10 o'clock tonight, everybody out there, be safe, be considerate of your neighbors, be good to each other, be good to your homes. I'll talk to everybody next week.